This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Assessing the grim toll in China.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. A catastrophic 7.8 magnitude earthquake has killed thousands in south central China. The state-run news agency is reporting 80% of the buildings in one part of Sichuan province have been toppled, and 3,000 to 5,000 people are feared dead in that area alone. The quake knocked out power across a wide area and halted production at several auto factories, but Chinese financial markets remained open, and there have been no immediate reports of serious industrial disruptions. In fact, several hours after the quake, China's central bank announced moves to tighten liquidity in the banking system. It's the fourth such move this year and may stem in part from news today that inflation in China remains stubbornly high. Marketplace's Scott Tong has more on that from Shanghai.
Consumer prices in April jumped 8.5% over last year. That's just shy of a 12-year high. Most of the sticker shock is food, pork and cooking oil, for instance. Those prices may fall back, but the cost of everyday goods like toothpaste and diapers is creeping up too. And the global fear is Chinese factories are hiking prices for everyone. They face rising material and energy costs, plus rising wages, and a Chinese currency up 15% against the dollar. Here's economist Paul Cavey of Macquarie Securities.
The cost of goods coming out of China does go up. Depending how the rest of the world is by then faring in terms of commodity prices and these other inflationary pressures that are currently being seen, this could be quite troubling for central banks around the world.
He says it would be at least a year before the banks start freaking out. Still, many economists think China has reached a turning point, that the era of exporting ever lower prices is over. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Wall Street is in a better place than where it left off after Friday's 120-point loss for the Dow. This morning, a blue-chip index is up 35 points, a quarter of 1%. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are starting the day up 0.2%. It's also been a positive day on markets in Europe and Asia. BlackBerry versus Apple? Sounds like a food fight, maybe, but it's really just another battle in the long-running handheld technology war. The Wall Street Journal reports BlackBerry is getting ready to unleash its latest weapon against the Apple iPhone. From New York, Elisa Roth has more.
The new BlackBerry Bold will use a different kind of network, which will let it run all kinds of new features. It'll be easier to download music, surf the net, and watch videos, and it'll have more processing power so it can run all kinds of business software. It'll also get a sleek new look, a nod, some say, to its stylish competitor, the iPhone. BlackBerry's maker, Research in Motion, already has around 14 million users in 135 countries. It's doubled its subscriber numbers every year for the last three. But it's got competition on all sides. The top rival in the U.S. is the Apple iPhone, which has been trying to woo more business customers lately. The biggest winner in all this may be carrier AT&T. It has dibs on both the BlackBerry and the iPhone. In the Big Apple, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Reporters for one of the world's biggest newswire services are talking about a walkout. The Thomson Reuters news staff are considering a strike in response to an upcoming round of job cuts. The downsizing has been expected since the London-based Reuters merged with Canada's financial data giant Thomson last year. Management is expected to announce which positions will be axed within the next couple of weeks. Europe's biggest bank, HSBC, is reporting losses totaling around $5 billion. Its latest write-down of bad debts on U.S. home loans and deterioration in the value of risky assets. That's actually an improvement, but as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports, the damage is still being felt.
HSBC has set aside another $3.2 billion to cover potential losses in the U.S. in the first quarter. Overall, the bank's profits are higher. Business in Asia remains buoyant, but HSBC must now deeply regret its purchase of Household International in the U.S. The subprime specialist has so far cost HSBC around $18 billion in bad loans, and those American losses seem certain to continue, says analyst Ewan Sterling.
There's no sign that the U.S. housing situation has stabilized. Prices are still falling quite rapidly. The housing transactions that are going through are continuing to dwindle.
But one of the biggest British casualties of the US subprime mess could be the UK Treasury. It's just emerged that banking write-downs here in recent weeks have cut the amount of tax payable by $5 billion, a loss of revenue the government can ill afford. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, May 12th on marketplace.org. Food prices are higher overall, but the cost of meat actually hasn't risen too much. Chicken in particular has remained close to what it cost last year. But that doesn't mean chicken producers aren't trying to raise prices. Ashley Milne-Tite explains.
A pound of boneless chicken breasts has gone up about 1% in the last year. Compare that to 16% for bread and 23% for milk. Richard Lobb of the National Chicken Council says producers would love to hike prices.
The cost of feed ingredients has more than doubled since the fall of 2006. It's the largest uncontrollable cost that their companies have, and they're just having a very hard time passing that cost along.
He says powerful supermarket chains won't agree to big increases in poultry prices. Powerful fast food chains are making the most of cheap chicken as well. On May 15th, McDonald's will give away its new breakfast chicken sandwich. But David Henkes of food industry consulting group Technomic says that's more about marketing than cost.
That, and it's a little bit more of a strategic focus on building traffic and building some incremental sales.
Even if the price of chicken goes up, he says, fast food joints will keep pushing poultry products because they're popular. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Last year, the Federal Trade Commission received more than 220,000 complaints about web-related fraud. With all the focus on internet spam, we may be forgetting about the good old-fashioned hard copy junk. Sally Herships reports.
I recently got spammed. It was the usual thing about a distant relative who died, leaving me millions. What was unusual was it showed up in my mailbox, the real one. I wondered, are consumers getting better at detecting email scams? Are criminals turning back to traditional mail? How can regular mail spam possibly be cost-effective? I decided to go straight to the source. I called my spammer.
Hi, is this Mr. Rosso?
Problem was, once I told him I was a journalist, he didn't want anything to do with me.
Hello? Hello?
So I decided to talk to Sally Greenberg, executive director of the National Consumers League. She says certain crimes like fake check schemes are on the rise. In fact, she just received a bad check for $17,000.
It looks legitimate. There is nothing counterfeit looking about it, and it's drawn on a regular bank, and it came overnight mail. It's the kind of thing that has the markers of legitimacy and very, very tempting to put in the bank.
The scam works like this. You receive a fake check. Your bank cashes it, and the scammer then asks you to cover taxes or fees. By the time your bank finds out the check is no good, the criminal is long gone. Greenberg says the average loss from scams like these is $3,000, certainly enough to keep spammers in paper and envelopes. Jim Van Dyke is the founder of Javelin Strategy and Research. He says people need to remember old rules, even when they switch to new technologies.
They're being more vigilant about the electronic channels, and they're not paying attention as much to the old-fashioned ones.
In other words, people tend to pay more attention to what comes through their email than through their mailbox.
People often assume that criminals have some sort of a bias toward new technology, like criminals think new technology is cool and fun. But what we see is that criminals have no bias at all.
What they really want are your personal details, and they'll do whatever it takes to get them. But Van Dyke says most people lose their identity when they lose their personal effects. So if you want to play it safe, leave your checkbook at home. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
The credit squeeze is making it harder for the big private equity firms to do the deal these days, but at least give them credit for being creative. So says Fortune magazine editor-at-large Alan Sloan. In some cases, we're talking very creative. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Bob.
So with all the problems we've been hearing about the credit squeeze for several months now, is the day of the mega buyout over?
The day of the mega buyout is suspended, but the firms who have a lot of things to do and a lot of money to invest in are now doing a business buying loans in their own buyouts at a discount from the bank that made the loan.
I'm confused. How does that work?
Okay, it goes like this. Let's say you had gotten a mortgage from Sloan Savings and Loan on your house. And I hate to say this, but you're a broadcaster. You are not the world's greatest credit. Nothing personal. So what happens is I have to take a loss on this loan, and I really don't want it on my books anymore. Someone comes and says, you know, Moon's worth 90 cents on the dollar. And I say, okay. And what I do is I then lend him money to buy the loan at 90 cents on the dollar. The buyout firms are buying at a discount the loans in the buyouts that they did, and the banks are lending them the money to do it.
Hold on here just a second. Doesn't this become so circular after a while that it just stacks problems on top of problems?
Well, it depends for whom. You know, if you're the buyout firm, we invented a term for it at Fortune. We call it double cropping. Since you're clearly a man of the fields, right? That's when you get, you know, two crops out of the same field in the same season. So first you do the buyout and then buy the loan from the bank at a discount, borrowing heavily for most of the purchase price from the bank.
Conventional wisdom says that these leveraged buyouts help whip companies into shape and that sort of thing. But are they having any trouble now with some of these buyouts that they've already made?
Well, they're having trouble with some of these buyouts because some of them weren't done well and they borrow too much money. And if you don't mind, I would like to dissent from the idea that, you know, piling debt on a company is necessarily a good thing. I mean, sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. But the only people it's a magical tonic for are the people who do the deals, because they get paid a ton of money if the deals work out well. They get paid pounds of money if the deals work out badly.
Okay. Alan Sloan is senior editor-at-large at Fortune magazine. Thanks for joining us.
Take care.
And I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. Your thoughts? Visit marketplace.org and click on Contact. And thanks very much for making us a part of your morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.